Welcome to the Heart for God podcast. With many years of experience pastoring and helping to start churches, Dr. Jim Townsley has some practical and biblical advice that can be a great help to you and your ministry. On this podcast, Dr. Townsley and other guests with special expertise cover a variety of topics. His goal is to help you lead your church to be a healthy, strong, and balanced ministry, and for your family to be happy, healthy, and living for the Lord.
All right, I want to cover some things in order here. Here are the items we're going to try and cover: preparing for retirement, pastoral transition, evaluating your ministry, taking your church to the next level, seeking pastoral counsel, renewing your vision, keeping the church fundamental, and the dangers of the wrong influence. Now, the first thing I'm going to do is talk about preparing for retirement. And the reason I want to do that is because every young guy needs to know this. You start at the very beginning. You don't wait till you're 60 years old and you got 10 years left or 15 years left, prepare for retirement. Now, the church, I mean, if you're independently wealthy, then you have nothing to worry about. I don't know anybody here today like that, but if you are, then you probably don't need this. But otherwise, I think it's helpful. If when you start out, say you're 25 years old, if you just start by saving 5% of whatever your income is, doesn't matter, could be very, very small, 5% of what you have, say if you're a Christian school teacher, say 5%, they're like the lower end of the scale of everybody getting paid. I mean, that's the reality. So if they take 5% and you, for 40 years, age 65, retire, so in 40 years, so if you take that 5% every year, it doesn't seem like much, but in 40 years, it would be over $500,000 if you took that money and invested it. Now you say, anybody starting out in the ministry, it's like you put everything in. You're sacrificing everything. You're doing, you're so burdened about the ministry, that's all you're worried about. And you don't think about yourself, you're thinking about others, thinking about the ministry. But it wouldn't take a lot, just 5%. Now, maybe the church would be able to put that 5% away, or more, 10%. I mean, if somebody's making $100,000 a year and you put 10% away, you're talking $2 or $3 million in 40 years for sure if you take that money and invest it. So it is all a matter of time, the length of time. Warren Buffett, one of the savvy investors that everybody looks at as an icon, was asked what was the most important thing about investing. And his answer was time. It's length of time. So starting early, you can start now, you can do something. When we started, I was making $77 a week in 1975. Was it 1875? It was 1975. And I was making $77 a week. We were putting a good portion of that back in the offering. I mean, that's what you do when you start out. But we saved $5 a week. Now, I know when we were in Bible college, Coopers are here, they probably did the same thing. Our weekly grocery bill was $7. That was a weekly grocery bill. So prices were different then. But $5 still wasn't a whole lot. And we saved that money and saved it and saved it. And after 5 or 10 years, it still didn't seem like a whole lot. But we took some that money we had saved. I borrowed a little bit of my father. I bought a two-family house. I converted to a three-family house. After 2 years, I sold it and came up with $30,000 to buy the home we live in now, because the church couldn't afford to do it. They didn't have the money for the down payment. So that was how we kind of got started. But length of time is the most important thing. And if you need help, I can help you. We have people in our church can help you, and probably the other people can help you. But you can start investing in different ways that are safe and secure. Right now you get about 5% or just under that now on certificates of deposit for about a year, which is a pretty good deal. You can get buy bonds, you can buy stocks, you can buy the market, you can buy the S&P 500, and it buys a little bit of 500 major companies in the United States, the average rate of return is about 10%. The thing is, it goes up and down. You know, one year you may lose money. The next year you may make 20%. And it goes up and down. But you don't have to be savvy. You don't have to be smart. You can just buy the market, an exchange-traded fund or something like that. And it's a good idea to diversify your money. But, you know, I'd be happy to help you. There are others who can help you with that. The most important thing is to have a plan. Say, I'm going to start now, and we'll start putting money away. So why do you need money for retirement? So here's the dilemma. There are people my age and even a little bit older, and they may or may not have Social Security, but they don't have any other skill. They're in very poor health, and they can't afford to step down because they don't have enough money to live. They need that salary. And the church is going down, and yet they can't afford to do anything else. And they hang on, and it destroys the church. Let's say you go, and I know another example where the pastor has come in, he has sacrificed, he's almost burned himself out. Now the choice you have as a church, you can say, well, oh, God bless you. Thank you so much. You've been here and you've done a great job. Be warmed and filled. Now go your way and we'll hire somebody else to come in. Now, the church doesn't want to do that, but they don't think about what can we do. And there ought to be an incremental way for the church by supporting you for that end time by giving you a tenure. So a little bit every year, the longer you're there, the more that you get from that. It only makes sense to do that. The other option is the church says, well, the pastor gave everything he had. He doesn't have any savings. He doesn't own a home. He's lived in the parsonage. And now we're going to have to support him and subsidize his retirement. So out of the church offerings, they're supporting the pastor, and they may not have enough money to support the new guy coming in. So you see, there's a lot of dilemmas that come with that. And you don't want to feel like you're some kind of a hero by saying, well, I don't need anything, you know, don't worry about me. But at some point, the church is going to worry about you. And it puts a greater burden on them. So thinking ahead is an important thing. Pastoral transition. Now, we're in a pastoral transition. Brother Falk has just gone through it. There may be others that are getting to that point. And there are a large number of people, we call them baby boomers, that are retiring, stepping down. And I have a paper for you, so I'll leave that in the foyer when I'm done. This was written by Brother Lonnie Moore, who just went through a transition. But let me just say, if the old-fashioned way was, well, here's my one-month or two-month notice, I'm stepping down, now the church has got to go out and find somebody and get the new pastor. Now, there are a number of problems with that. One of the problems is, what do the people in the church know about how to find a pastor? I mean, most of the preachers, you could, if somebody comes and candidates, you could find out about probably everything about them in about, you know, 24 hours because you know who to talk to and who to find out all that information. But people in the church don't know that. They don't know how to do that, and they're not sure what they're looking for. It puts a great burden on people that not necessarily prepared for. Now, they may. Sometimes it works out. So the transition occurs. The new pastor comes in. This pastor left. Now we've got a new guy comes in. So here's the problem. He's looking at the situation. Well, here's what I want to do. And he's building, he's starting all over again. Here's my plan. This is what I'm going to do. If, however, he came in and was in the church for a number of years, we're in a 6-year transition. Others have done similar, or a 2-year transition at least, where somebody comes in and they see what you're doing and why you're doing it, and they get behind the burden you have and they build upon it so that it's not starting all over again, changing everything. I know someone that the building was a beautiful building. It had just been remodeled. New pastor came in, took all the pews out, changed the whole platform, put chairs in the auditorium. You know, we're going a different direction. We're going a different way. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that's a shame. It's a terrible thing. That if there had been a transition that said we're going to build upon what's been done, would have made more sense. Now, you think about it. Moses had Joshua. Joshua served with him. He saw Moses in action. You think about Elijah and Elisha. You know, there was training that they built upon that. So there's a lot to be said about someone coming in for a period of time. So you have to think ahead. If you think, well, you know, I'm going to pastor till I'm 70, then probably when you're 60, you need to be seriously thinking about that transition, because it takes time. You got to prepare your church. You got to prepare your wife. You got to prepare yourself. It takes time to find the right one to come in. So you don't just say, well, looks like that's it. Now, next week I'm gone. You just can't do it in a moment's notice. It takes time to prepare that. You know, there ought to be at least a 4 or 5 year window where you say, we think we have the guy and we're praying about it. And so there needs to be a period of time to be able to take care of that transition. And, you know, it comes at you quicker than you might think. Okay, that's question number two. The third is evaluating your ministry. So we're 4 years ago, maybe a little more than 4 years ago, I just felt the Lord wanted me to resign at a certain point. I said in 2025, 2 years from now, I will turn 72, May the 16th. The next week, the weekend, will be our 50th anniversary. Now, when I was 60, I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, I feel like now I could probably pastor till I'm 85. You know, it's like waking up, being in bed, thinking I can run 5 miles till you get out of bed. You just, you know, can I pastor when I'm 85? And I just felt that's what the Lord wanted me to do. That 50 years, that's enough. And there are probably other things I could do. So I kind of left it at that. And then several months, maybe half a year or so went by, and the thought occurred to me, what am I going to do? You know what? I never thought about that plan. I just went one step at a time. Yeah, the Lord wants me to resign. Then, well, what can I do? So I have these things that you can't sleep. You know, 3 o'clock in the morning, you're praying. God just directs you, speaks to you about something. And so I had this thought that I think I would like to go around and help churches and help young pastors and struggling churches or churches that have gone through some problems. And so from that came this idea of evaluating or reviewing people's ministry. And I shared that idea with some people, and I probably have more of this response than anything else. Do you think anybody's going to let you come in and look at their ministry? Well, so far I've done 7, and I've not advertised. I've not asked anybody, okay, can I come? But I've got the rest of the year scheduled and into next year. And when I step down, if the Lord is in this, which I believe he is, I'll do it every weekend if I can, to go and help evaluate somebody's ministry. It's not to criticize or be critical of a ministry, but to give ideas and help prepare their vision and get the people behind the program and what they're doing. So this was the idea of evaluating your ministry and reviewing your whole ministry. And I just want to tell you how I'm doing it, and there may be some things that, I mean, I can email you the questionnaire. Or there's a link to the questionnaire if that's a help to you. You know, I just want to be a blessing and help. And it's something, it's good to have outside eyes to come and look. You know, there are things that you get used to that you don't see anymore, you don't think about anymore, and somebody new coming in, they see it right away. So having a new set of eyes look at things. So here are the things that I send out a questionnaire. It's a 40-page questionnaire. So it's just a general information about the pastor's family, his health, his vision or purpose, his schedule, vehicles, phone, finances, his residence, education, his work history, his spiritual life, family life, pastor's entertainment, his preaching, his people skills, his mentors. Then there's a section for the church. The church profile is general information about it, the leaders' information, the different staff or volunteer leaders, the finances and budget, the building, the grounds, the maintenance, everything from light bulbs, carpet, efficiency, lighting, and so on. The programs of the church, the operation of the church, missions program, special needs, and there are a number of forms and documents that I'd like to have, the constitution, your tax exempt status. And I put it in a report similar to this. There's one for the pastor, and then there's one for the church. And they both belong to the pastor, but the pastor is personal. No one's going to see. The one for the church, he'll share whatever he wants with the church. And if something happened to him that he stepped down, died, retired, a new man can come in and, you know, it's like an appraisal report on a piece of property. It's complete. And somebody can come in, they can find all the forms and documents in one place. And they find the history of the church and all the leaders of the church, then protocols of the church and so on. So that's one of the things that I'm doing. So the way I do it is I send a questionnaire a month ahead. Right now I'm in the process. I'll be going to New Jersey in about a month. Amen. So I sent the questionnaire out now. He's working on that. And they send it back to me so I can review the constitution, their budget, things ahead of time. And then I'll go on a Saturday and we'll walk through the building, the property. I mean, we look at the mechanics, the heating unit, air conditioning, electrical panels, the structure of the building. I mean, we look at everything. And walk through the building, we talk about the questionnaire he filled out. And so it takes about 2 or 3 hours, is the way it's averaged, when I first sit down and talk to the pastor and go over that information. On Sunday morning, I go as a guest or visitor. Some cases, they might know who I am. In other cases, they have no idea. As far as they know, I'm just a guest or visitor. But I get to observe what's going on, you know, that sometimes a pastor can't do all those things. So I come in just as a guest. I get there early. I see who opens up the building, you know, how people arrive, the flow of people. Can they find where they go? Is there signage? Do they know how to get there? Are they greeted? Are the church friendly? How does the service run and operate? Is it smooth? Is there downtime? Is it sluggish? Is it upbeat? And, you know, and I just watch and observe. And I'll go to the Sunday school classes and talk to the teachers. And then I'll go to junior church. We have junior church. And this is an interesting thing. Any pastor that has a junior church has probably never seen it. You have no idea what goes on. And, you know, it's quite interesting. And the same probably for Sunday school. Many times they've never seen a teacher teaching in Sunday school because they're teaching themselves. So I'll go around and see all of these things. And then that night I preach and give a challenge to the church for the future, tell them what I'm doing, why I'm there, I want to help the church. On Monday morning I meet with the pastor. Again, it takes about 3 hours. I'll usually take the pastor to lunch and talk to him and his family and so I've talked to him then, and Monday morning I'll sit down, it takes 2 or 3 hours. I go over the report, and I tell him both his personal report and the church report, and I give him a 2-year plan for the future. Here is what I see. You can throw it in the garbage. You know, if it's helpful, then use it, and, you know, you can take it from there. So there's a plan for the pastor. It's a 2-year goal, and then a plan for the church. And provided he wants me to share everything for the church, if he says there's something he would rather me not say, I won't say it. But on Monday night, I meet with, and I ask for the key people who are the visionaries for the church. Who's going to help your church go forward? Who's going to take it the next step? Whoever those people are, maybe somebody newly saved. Maybe your deacons or trustees, or could be your staff, or depending on the size of the church. But whoever those key people are, I want to meet with them. And it's usually about 10 or 12 people. It'll be 4 or 5, but it's usually 10 or 12. It's not a big group. And then I share the ideas with them. Here's what I see. Here are suggestions I have. and interact. And it's usually, again, a 2 or 3 hour meeting, and there's give and take. In fact, we did it, Brother Doug, I think the people stayed another hour or two after I left. And so it had to be late whenever they finished talking. So that's a 2-year plan. Some of it you can do immediately. Some of it takes time. It's a long-term thing. Making a church a friendly church, you don't do in 1 week. You know, there are different ideas, suggestions of how to do that and make it work. So this is, it's my thing. I'm necessarily promoting it. I mean, you don't have to have me come. And I'm trying to get some other people trained that they could do the same thing and help churches. I mean, if the Lord gives me 15 years, I could go maybe to 600 churches the rest of my life if I went almost 40 a week or 40 a year. So if there may be some others that can be a help to some degree. But any information I have is just, it's free. I don't charge for anything. It's, you know, it's just to be a help, to be a blessing. One of the things as a result of that, that I will give to the pastor, and otherwise I sell it for $15. I have a thumb drive that I give to people. In it is a lot of stuff that could be for the pastor, his wife, or teachers, or leaders in the church. We have a list of hundreds of Sunday school pictures that you can print on your own. They're digitally saved, and they're pictures like of Moses, you know, on the mountain I spoke of this morning, and everything imaginable. Many pictures of Jesus, of Paul, and all the characters of the Bible you can use in Sunday school. I've written articles for 15 years, 2 a month. All those are ideas, which we also are going to start putting in a podcast. But all those are on the thumb drive. All the Sunday school lessons from Joe Vasek. That's a 2-year plan. Go all the way through the Bible. There's a putting your finances in order, which is also a PowerPoint program, and it has a teacher-student manual that you can take it and use it. And putting your life in order is a spiritual warfare. Again, a PowerPoint. It's in a 12-week, and it's in a 4-week format. You could use either one or both. And all the sermon outlines and notes I have for going back to 1993, and that's thousands of sermons and sermon notes, and it's in an Excel file of the titles. You can look it up, and if you or a text or a title, and you can find those. There's Sunday school lessons and through the Bible. We went, one of the best things we ever did for Sunday school is through the Bible in 5 weeks. It was a dispensational study, and this is not a lie. People were running to get into church because they didn't want to be late. They wanted to be there for that class. It's been the best thing we ever did through the Bible in 5 weeks. So it was a dispensational study, and I have that on there. And there's a PowerPoint program. I have all of Tom Wallace's sermons, which he allowed me to put on there, that sermons he's preached at national conventions and so on. There's visual stories and songs. There are scores of them that you can print them out, and you can color them. You can make signs out of them. All the women of the Bible, my wife's kind of life work, is all the women of the Bible, and has tremendous outlines. And guys say, oh, I would never use that. Yeah, Mother's Day, it's good to have all you can get. But I've preached some of hers, are good sermons, so you've got a lot of notes on that. In addition, we have a job description for everybody that does anything. If anybody has a position, they know, here's my job description. Here's my code of conduct. Here's my dress code to follow. So all of that's on there. Our constitution, our statement of faith. And then there's a number of single files, principles to judge questionable things, our family rules, how to start a church, the order of service, a prayer bulletin sample, Sunday bulletin sample, this thing on transitioning, that's all on there, weekly deposit slips and how we count the money and so on. There's an article on wine and modesty. So there's a lot on there, to say the least. You'd have to get on there, and it would take you a couple hours just kind of figure out all the stuff that's on there. So anyway, evaluating your ministry. I'm not going to get through all this, so let me cover what I think is important. taking your church to the next level. One of the years ago when I started, the idea was you start with 100 people, 300 on your first anniversary, 600 on your second anniversary, 1,200 on your third anniversary, and then you go around and you tell everybody how you did it. And that was kind of the mindset of a lot of preachers of that era. There was a lot of churches that were growing and great things happening. It was very challenging. Fortunately, I don't think that's everybody's mindset today. But on the other hand, we can get stuck and think, this is it. This is all I can do. And it is important to have a plan. How do we go to the next level? One of the things is make your church as healthy as it can be. Make everything work the way it should work. If there's an aspect of your church that's not working, you need to try and fix it, make it better. So, that, again, that comes back to evaluating. That's one of the things I do, evaluating your ministry. Is everything working right? You know, some things are really, really good. I was at a large church down in North Carolina three or four weeks ago, and they had a Spanish ministry that was the greatest thing about the whole church. It was a big church, but they were struggling. It had a lot of dysfunction to it. But their Spanish ministry was thriving, and they were, you know, their nursery was filled with babies. They were running 200. They had a bus ministry. Their young families, people being saved. But the old church had one child in the nursery, had 12 in the teen Sunday school class. And this is a church that one time ran as many as 3,000. So there are some things that may be running well and other things that are not running well. And a healthy church, you're trying to make everything work. You know, you want it all to be as the best it can be. So that's one thing that we always ought to be pursuing. Let's make it, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Let's make everything work well. And there are a lot of other things that you can do. And I want to share one thing with you that I've shared with some of you. There's a mail out that we made. And again, this was like off the cuff. Do you ever have an idea that was a great idea and it just didn't work? Am I the only one that's done that? Oh, this is a great idea. Other people say, that's a great idea, and nothing. And then you have something just almost off the cuff and it just takes off. And like God just blessed it. And that's the case of this. I mean, just prior to getting the pulpit, I said, you know what I think? I think we should send a book to everybody in our town. I have no idea I hadn't even thought about it. What's it going to cost? What's the mailing? How expensive will it be to get the books printed? And I never even thought about it. I just said, I think we ought to do this. By the time the service was over and I got to the back, people ran to me and said, I want to help. I'm going to give you so much money. And so I got a text on my phone. Somebody's listening online. I want to help with that. And before I knew it, we had $15,000 for this project that I never even, before I got to the pulpit, never even thought about. Well, then we found out we can do this a whole lot cheaper than we realized. So the first, we sent out 100,000 of these. Ultimately, we didn't at first. We sent out about 20,000. But it's a simple book, and it was during COVID, so it was really a good time. It's only 27 pages, but it's got a flow to it. It's got a theme. You know, if you send out John and Romans, somebody gets it. It just doesn't look that interesting. You know, there's no pictures in it. It's all text. And we've done that. We've handed out a lot of John and Romans. So we thought, we're going to send them a book. So we found out the company, for 20,000, they print them 25 cents a piece. I mean, a perfect bind. You know, they printed them 25 cents a piece. So we got 20,000 to start with. Then we found out, with our bulk mailing permit, we can send these things out in bulk. And they would, what they did is they just put current address. We had an envelope, sort of a plastic envelope. We had to seal them, put labels on it, said current address, and it had a postage thing, was our permit, return address. And so many people would come and they would get the books, put it in, put the stickers on. I don't think there's a bookmark here. No, you had a bookmark that had all the information about our church. So we put the bookmark in, put it in. So we started sending these things out. The first day that they went out, we had a call. It was about as nasty as you could ever imagine. You know, somebody, you know, I can't believe you sent this. You know, it's garbage and so on and so forth. And then they have what they call Southington Talks. I think a lot of the towns around here have a local social media platform. And everybody gets on and talks about all kinds. Well, they were said, I got these books in the mail. And it was going all over Southington Talks. And somebody said, well, I think they sent it to everybody. It wasn't just you. And so, you know, that we only had one other really nasty call. But for every 5,000 we sent out, we had two really good prospects. Someone that came to church, they called. We had people call and said, I want to send you some money and I want more copies of it. But it's been about every 5,000 two contacts. And it's continued on. Somebody last week said, they called in, they said, I got on a bus. I think it was in New Britain. Was it New Britain? So they got on the bus and they found this book on the bus. And then they called up. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, somebody sent me a letter from prison in New Haven. And he was from Bristol or Torrington, I'm not sure which. But he lived both places, probably. And he said, you know, I actually am saved, but I've just made dumb mistakes. And he said, I came to my cell and this book was in my cell. He got the book and read it. And we had somebody call up and said, I just got this book. I was ready to kill somebody. And I got this book, and it stopped me. And he came to church. They came, I don't know, a month or something, and brought his son. Now I haven't seen him in a while. But we have people baptized. We have people in church that are coming regularly as a result of it. Now, that's not a huge response, but that's a better response than anything we've ever done. And if you're interested in doing that, we have actually, we sent out 100,000 of these, and then there's another book I wrote, which is, it says in the beginning, on it has a bookmark with our information on it. So it's an apologetics 101. It's really, really simple, how we know there's a God. And we sent out 50,000 of these, and pretty much the same result from sending that out. And there's another one we haven't sent out, but would work also, Beyond a Shadow of a Doubt, How to Know You're Saved, Beyond a Shadow of a Doubt. So any of those three books can be printed, and the prices have gone up. I'm not sure now what it would cost, 30 to 35 cents per book, and if you probably got 10,000 or more. And we have a packet for you in the back if you don't have one. Some of you are already given one, too. But I have a pack in the back if you want to. Take that, and it explains the printer. You call the printer and say, would you print of that book? And they'll print that book. And then you have a template that you can put your own information on the bookmark so that, you know, they know to go to your church. So if they are interested or got saved or something. So that's been a blessing. And the other part of the blessing is Jackie Smith almost single-handedly sat there day after day stuffing these things. People became experts at stuffing. You know, it had a lot of seniors that came, and some of the college students came, and we set a table up, and we would have sometimes 10 or 15 people out there, sometimes two or three. And every day they'd be coming in, they're putting stickers on, and they're praying, and they're fellowshipping. You know, it was a great, great event for our church. And up until, when's the last time we did this? A month or two ago? We did the last? Something like that. So we did our town and every town that touches our town and a little bit beyond. Our son David has a couple in their church now that they're coming regularly, and that we sent it out in his town of Terryville. So that's one outreach thing that's kind of a unique thing, and people gave to it and kept giving. Probably we ended up with at least $50,000. Probably more than that, probably $75,000 that people donated. They just kept giving money. And that's something we pleaded for. That people say, hey, let's go to another town. Let's do another one. So it's that kind of thing. Sometimes people are more apt to give toward as a project. So there are a lot of things that we can do to take a church to the next level, but it all comes into contact with people. You know, you need to have a good website. Social media is important. A lot, but the most important one is the people that actually walk in the door and visit your church. Those are the best contacts. And having a plan to reach them. We have people scattered throughout the auditorium that know if somebody's new, and they have sort of been trained, you know, to ask questions to who they are, what they're doing. Somebody walked in Sunday and dressed in a suit, and you don't often see that. I don't want to pry, but, you know, what's your name? You know, where are you from? And I didn't say much more than that. Well, ultimately found out he had actually been in Bible college and had gotten away from the Lord. And so people can be identified, you know, around the area if you just are aware of it, if you're looking. So it's an important thing for the people that come to have a plan to reach those people and make it a good experience when they come. So all those things are important.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, consider sharing it with a friend. You can also follow at Dr. Townsley on Twitter or on Facebook at Jim Townsley.